Once upon a time, in a faraway land called the stock market, Jack was thinking, I wish there was a way to grow my money. Suddenly, a wise man appeared.
Hey, what are you looking at? I command you to stop wasting your money on dumb luck ideas. Subscribe to the new investing strategy newsletter at etfguide.com. It'll give you insight into the stock market's next move so that you can profit.
Jack subscribed to the newsletter at etfguide.com, and soon his portfolio looked like a magical beanstalk that grew and grew and grew with lots of greenbacks everywhere, and Jack became a household name throughout the land. Understand that there is no magical beanstalk, no wise man, and no Jack. But there is ETF Guide Strategy Newsletter, which explains simple steps on how to profit in the market.
Subscribe at etfguide.com today.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host, Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Well, this is your weekly insight into the major stock, bond, and commodity indexes and the financial products tracking them. It's called the Index Investing Show, and it's great to have you with us. My name is Ron DeLegge. I will be starring as myself. We'll be together for the next hour talking about the birds and the bees of successful investing. If you'd like to jump in, 877-808-6116. That is the number. If you don't want to call or can't get through, you can email me, ron@indexshow.com. Be sure to give us your first name along with your city, and we will get to you. For today's program agenda, very busy schedule. Author of Ponzi Scheme, The True Story of a Financial Legend, will be my guest, Mitchell Zuckoff. That is his name. He is also a professor of journalism at Boston University. We're going to get into who Charles Ponzi was, of course, what he did. Most of his evil work actually took place in the 1920s. Give you some historical background. I know there's been a lot of comparisons to Charles Ponzi and, of course, Bernard Madoff, our era or our generation's version of Charles Ponzi. But the similarities between the two, I don't think that there's as many similarities as there are dissimilarities. So we're going to get into all of that. And also, good historical lesson for all of us, how to prevent ourselves from becoming victims. Victims of Madoff schemes, victims of Ponzi schemes, victims of investment scams. So stay tuned for that. We'll also get into some of your emails along with financial headlines of the week. Again, 877-808-6116 or email me, ron@indexshow.com. Well, let's get right to topics for discussion. Beginning with the University of Michigan, their December consumer sentiment numbers rising, pretty good level, 74.2. That is a higher than actually the highest mark since June. So it seems like if you believe in this particular reading, consumers are a little bit more positive about the economic outlook. And, of course, we see that being reflected in the price of stocks. We'll get to that in a minute. Stocks globally, despite the crisis in Europe and despite the ballooning government deficits, stocks are still having a good year. And if gains hold, that's what this year will turn out to be. Now, also, a Bloomberg National poll shows that the Americans, speaking of deficit, want the U.S. deficit reduced, but at the same time, they oppose any and all cuts to programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Insecurity. Americans, according to the poll, also oppose cuts to most other major domestic programs along with defense spending. They want to keep subsidies for farmers. They want to keep tax breaks like mortgage interest deduction in place. Americans are also against any increase in gasoline taxes. Who can blame them? And by the way, all of this goes against the president's deficit panel, who argues that cuts in government spending for some of these very programs are necessary to tackle the $1.3 trillion deficit, which now, by the way, represents a whopping 9% of our nation's GDP. So will the government be able to rein in on the deficit without cutting into programs like Medicare and Social Insecurity that have become mainstays for the American public? I don't know. But I think it's wishful thinking to believe that fiscal responsibility can be achieved without sacrifices. However, cuts of any magnitude should probably be a last resort, only after other wasteful government spending has been first tackled. So in other words, prioritize. That's a buzzword for all government officials, prioritize. Now, the psychology of investing is a field of study that's always captivated my attention. Why do we do what we do? Why are we bearish when we should be bullish? Why are we bullish when we should be bearish? Why do we make counterproductive financial decisions that inevitably come back to bite us? Well, the American Association of Individual Investors, they release a weekly sentiment of their members. So basically how their members feel. They ask their members to register their bullish, bearish, or neutral views on the stock market. And they do that early each Thursday. Now, over the past two decades, it's provided some pretty compelling contrarian results. If the reading is overly bearish, well, then you should be the opposite. You should be bullish. Conversely, when their group is overly bullish, you should probably be bearish. And really interesting results. I look at this, though, from the aspect of since upwards of 90% of all money invested in mutual funds, and right now there's probably about $11 or $12 trillion invested in mutual funds, now, upwards of 90% of all that money is invested in funds that try to beat the market. So using a contrarian investment strategy, the message here, ladies and gentlemen, is that you should be doing the exact opposite of the crowd, which would in this case be to index your portfolio to the market, use low-cost index funds, because the masses aren't doing that. So some pretty simple strategies on how to do the opposite of the crowd. And that's basically what I take from this particular reading, the American Association of Individual Investors, their weekly gauge. Of course, there are some that argue that statistically it doesn't mean much. Well, you can argue that, but at the same time, we have to look at bigger picture things. Well, let's take a quick gander and see where key market indexes stand so far in 2010. And yes, 2010 is nearing its end. Can you believe it? 2011 is staring us at or in the face. And the idea here, ladies and gentlemen, besides informing you of what the markets are doing, look, see, and compare the performance of your own portfolio versus some of these major benchmarks. How are you doing compared to some of these major barometers? So let's look at them. These figures provided courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. They are through the market close of December 10th. We'll begin with the total U.S. stock market. Ticker symbol VTI is an ETF that follows this area, and that encompasses large, mid, as well as small company stocks. VTI ahead by almost 14%. Anytime you have double-digit gains from major market barometers like this, you could say it's been a good year investment-wise. And if stocks just stay the same from here, that's what 2010 will turn out to be, a good year. Ticker symbol VEA follows international stocks in developed markets like Japan and France and England. VEA ahead by 6.3%. Bonds, total U.S. bond market, ticker symbol BND, up 2.2%. And speaking of bonds, has anybody bothered to look at treasury, the yield on treasuries? About 1% higher compared to early October. That wasn't supposed to happen according to the Federal Reserve's roadmap. Of course, they were trying, when they announced that QE2, as it's been called, quantitative easing, they've been trying to keep long-term interest rates lower. Well, 10-year bond is at 3.29%. And about 1% higher compared to October. We'll see if they continue and follow through with that QE2 plan. In emerging market stocks have had a great year. Ticker symbol VWO ahead by 15.5%. Gold, ticker symbol GLD, above 26% year to date. TIPS up 2.2%. And U.S. REITs, also known as Real Estate Investment Trust, ticker symbol VNQ, having an excellent year. Up 20.5%. So there you have it. If you'd like to get a prospectus or any more information, you can call our program at 877-808-6116 or email me, ron@indexshow.com. How is your investment portfolio doing this year? Is it falling behind? Is it keeping up? Is it helping you reach your financial goals? Let me know. Let me know how it's turned out for you. By the way, top industry sectors, industrial stocks are on fire. Ticker symbol XLI up 23.8% seems to indicate that the economy is indeed improving. Let's see if it holds. More when we return right here on the Index Investing Show.
And welcome to another round of Good Idea, Bad Idea, brought to you by 401krolloverguide.com. Are you ready? Fish-flavored ice cream. Is that a good idea or bad idea, Mr. Jones?
That's a good idea, George.
Okay, let's try this again. Doggy divorce court. Is that a good idea or bad idea?
I like puppies. I like to pet them. That's a good idea.
Okay, one final chance to redeem yourself, Mr. Jones. Winner takes all. Leaving your 401k behind at an old job. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Why, that is a bad, bad idea, George.
That's right, folks. Leaving your 401k plan behind at an old job is a really, really bad idea. Worse than fish-flavored ice cream or doggy divorce court. Go to 401krolloverguide.com to get your retirement money back on track. That's 401krolloverguide.com. And that does it for this round of Good Idea, Bad Idea. Please join us again next time.
All right, this is the Index Investing Show, 877-808-6116. ron@indexshow.com is the email address. And take a look at top S&P industry sectors so far this year. You can get an idea of what's really going on with the certain sectors of the market. Industrial stocks, for example, ticker symbol XLI, ahead by 23.8%. And this particular industry sector really has been leading most of the year. And, of course, this is one of those early cycle sectors. Consumer discretionary stocks, ticker symbol XLY, up 26.2%. And this is really one that has bucked the trend. A lot of people thought that, consumers were down and out. They wouldn't spend on automobiles and things like that. And, of course, they have cut back. They're not spending in pre-crisis levels, at pre-crisis levels, but nevertheless they are spending. And some of these consumer discretionary stocks inside ticker symbol XLY are doing pretty good, especially some of those discounters like Walmart and Costco and some of the online retailers like Amazon.com and eBay, all doing pretty well and boosting XLY's performance. And then materials, ticker symbol XLB, ahead by 12.9%, and this has been another top S&P industry sector, of course, very closely linked to commodity prices, and you could say materials are really a commodity type sector. Of course, commodity equities, we're not talking commodities, but XLB has actually been a very good performer. And then take a look at some of the laggards, some of the unloved sectors like healthcare stocks, ticker symbol XLV as in Victor, up 0.7%. Healthcare stocks haven't done anything this year. And the thing I'd like to say about this particular sector, though, is that it offers a real, real good value for those of you that are contrarian investors, thinking opposite of the crowd, or that want to buy your stocks on sale. Take a look at healthcare. Ticker symbol XLV is a good one. Loaded, just jam-packed with a lot of top high-quality blue chips like Pfizer, Merck, Abbott Laboratories, and so forth. A lot of pharmaceutical stocks in there. And that, you know, if you take a look at the demographics, too, of the United States and just, you know, here with an aging population, some of these companies are going to be benefiting from that in the future. Well, coming up in a little bit, we've got Mitchell Zuckoff. He's author of Ponzi scheme, the true story of a financial legend. And we're going to give you some perspective about who Charles Ponzi was. Also tell you about ways to prevent yourself from becoming a victim to investment scams. And as I said earlier, the comparisons between Charles Ponzi and Bernard Madoff are have been made. And there, to me, there's just a lot more dissimilarities than similarities. Madoff, for example, was a Wall Street insider. Ponzi was not. Madoff targeted wealthy investors. Ponzi targeted the masses or anybody that would invest with him. But with Madoff, it wasn't really that way. It was a very tight-knit association of wealthy investors that were trying to get in. Also, Madoff was extremely private and secretive about his business, whereas Ponzi, just the opposite, quite public about his investment scam, which he called his business. He even took out ads in the newspaper promising returns of 45% in a very short time frame, 60 days, 90 days. So a lot of dissimilarities between Ponzi and Madoff. And that's one of the other reasons you'll never hear me on this program ever refer to anything that Bernard Madoff did as a Ponzi scheme. Because to me, it's not only is it slanderous to Charles Ponzi, who probably would never want to be associated with a financial crackpot like Madoff. But beyond that, anything to me that's a $1 billion or above in terms of scams automatically deserves to be classified as a Madoff scheme. Anything less than that, well, if you want to classify it as a Ponzi scheme, that's fine with me. But the key here is Ponzi was the originator, Madoff was the master. So stay tuned for that. Also, year-end tax planning strategies, a lot of good ideas for those of you. Of course, there's not much time to do this. One tax break that hasn't been affected by legislative uncertainty, and isn't there a ton of that, contributions to qualified retirement plans. These are still one of the best legal tax shelters available to all of us, especially business owners. For example, the Simplified Employee Pension Plan, also known as a SEP, is a very popular type of retirement plan. Sole proprietors can contribute as much as 20% of their net business profit in 2010, up to a total of $49,000. That is, again, to SEP, while owners of corporations can contribute up to 25% of their salary to SEP. Even better, individuals that have until their tax filing deadline plus extensions to set up and fund a SEP. So that's something else that's something that gets overlooked. So again, with the SEP, you have until your tax filing deadline plus extensions to set up and fund a SEP. And of course, if you don't want to go that route with the SEP, you can also take a look at the solo 401k plan. Owners can contribute up to 100% of their first $16,500. I'm sorry, $16,500 of their 2010 business income, plus another 20% of their net profit, up to a total of $49,000. And of course, if you're above age 50, you can even do a little bit more than that. So just a couple of year-end tax planning tips for all of us. Well, let's get into some of your emails. Dear Ron, which funds or ETFs are likely to rise with a simultaneous fall in the euro and the U.S. dollar? Signed, Mark in Chappaqua, New York. Well, to me, Mark, the major weakness in currencies like the euro and the U.S. dollar, well, really indicates a few things. Number one, a lack of fiscal control and discipline by government. Number two, wavering confidence in government to get its financial house in order. And number three, the ever-present danger of currency revaluation. That's if things get really bad. In each of these cases, though, I think it makes a strong case for owning tangible assets as part of an overall diversified portfolio. I'm not in any way saying that you should put all of your assets in one particular asset class in order to try to overcome these weaknesses in currencies like the dollar or euro or whatever. But owning tangible assets, I think, can benefit a portfolio. Assets of real value like commodities, precious metals we've talked about over the past several weeks. Also, income-producing property like real estate, of course, with positive cash flow. But precious metals, we've talked about ticker symbol GLTR, which is one of my favorites. If you're going to go that route of investing in precious metals, an exchange-traded product, it's a 4-in-1. It owns gold, silver, platinum, and palladium all in one shot. And I think it's nice because it takes out a lot of the wonderment about which of these precious metals to own. Do you buy gold? Do you buy silver, platinum? Which one? Well, in GLTR, you can have a 4-in-1. You don't have to. Takes that guesswork out of the picture. Dear Ron, I'm interested in a new sector, Spider ETF, that just started back in September. It's ticker symbol GNR, which is the Spider Global Natural Resources ETF. Follows a diversified index of commodity producers in the energy and metals and agricultural sectors. I read the prospectus and really like the way the index is managed, but it is a new fund and it's thinly traded when compared to ticker symbol XLE, which follows S&P energy stocks and other sector funds that Spiders offer. So what's a good benchmark for liquidity for sector ETFs? Is there a minimum average daily volume I should be looking at? Signed, Tom in Seattle, Washington. Well, first of all, congratulations to Tom for reading the prospectus. I mean, for the rest of us, just because prospectus rhymes with asbestos does not mean you should be scared off by the prospectus. It's there to help you. Pay special attention to risk, charges, and fees. And with regard to trading volume and liquidity, I posed the same question to Dan Dolan over at the Select Sector Spiders to get his insight on the matter. And he told me that there's really no hard or fast set rules when it comes to specific number of shares traded to determine liquidity. So look at the number 50,000, though, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, about why that number might be important when it comes to liquidity. Coming up next, Mitch Zuckoff, author of Ponzi Scheme, right here on the Index Investing Show.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. Call Ron now at 888-344-1170. Or email him, ron@indexshow.com.
Mitch Zuckoff is a professor of journalism at Boston University. He's author of Ponzi Scheme, The True Story of a Financial Legend. His latest book is a biography on filmmaker Robert Altman, and he joins us today. Mitch, welcome to the Index Investing Show. Great to have you with us.
Ron. Oh, it's good to be here.
Thank you very much. Now, we've heard the Ponzi name many times before, but give us some historical background. Who was Charles Ponzi? What is a Ponzi scheme? And why does it still matter today?
Sure thing, Ron. Charles Ponzi was an Italian immigrant who came to America in 1903, like so many immigrants, hoping to make his fortune here. It didn't work out. He spent 17 or so years bouncing around from one operation to another. And then here in Boston in 1920, he came up with an idea that he thought could turn basically international postage stamps into profits. But he didn't have any seed money, so he started collecting money from neighbors, friends, fellow Italian immigrants, and then other immigrants with the promise of double your money in 90 days. And it turned out he couldn't turn those postage stamps into profits. And so what he ended up doing was basically the old scheme of robbing Peter to pay Paul. He used money from later investors to start paying off the promises made to early investors. And that's basically what a Ponzi scheme is, where you're promising to have a good investment out there, a good opportunity, but all you're doing is really taking money from one guy's pocket and putting it into another pocket. And the reason it still matters is because, as we've seen, they're still out there. They're all over the place. Every day I get a new report of a new Ponzi scheme being perpetrated somewhere.
Mitch Zuckoff, professor of journalism at Boston University, joining us today. He's author of Ponzi Scheme, The True Story of a Financial Legend. Now, almost every single day, we're bombarded with references at major media outlets to Madoff's investment scam as a Ponzi scheme, which I think is misleading. I think it's sometimes inaccurate because, in my view, it should really be called a Madoff scheme, because although Ponzi was the originator of the grandiose investment scams, Madoff was the master. Can we really put a multi-billion dollar scam of epic proportions even in the same league as what Ponzi did?
No, I think you're onto something, Ron. I think Madoff is truly in a class by himself, both in terms of the scale. First of all, I mean, the latest number we've seen is $20 billion, once we sort of back out the false prophets that he promised. But the other thing is that Madoff really set out to do this by all of his admissions and by all the admissions of the people around him that we've seen so far. This was his goal at the outset. Now, Ponzi didn't set out to purposely defraud people, although certainly he ended up doing that. Madoff was a whole other class of evil. This was a guy who set out by design to take people in and to take their money and to basically, at some point, he knew this was going to explode, whether it happened during his lifetime or afterward. So he is a special class unto himself.
So what can we do to get people to call it a Madoff scheme instead of Charles Ponzi scheme?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think now people do conflate the two, but I'll do my part if you do yours.
I heard that. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. Today we're pleased to have with us Mitch Zuckoff, author of Ponzi Scheme, The True Story of a Financial Legend. His latest book is actually unrelated but sounds interesting. It's a biography on filmmaker Robert Altman. Now, another issue is how the media refers to Madoff's duped clients as investors. With all due respect, now, if we're going to call Madoff's cadre of duped clients investors, that means we start having to call absent-minded gamblers investors, too. What are your thoughts on that?
It's an interesting point, Ron. I have certainly a great deal of sympathy for people, who, some of whom have seen their entire nest eggs wiped out.
And I do, too.
I'm sure you do. But certainly, no, they were never investors. They were people who...
Not in this particular instance.
No, not in this instance. They were not investors because I think, like you, I think of investors as people who do a certain amount of homework, who are, to me, an investor is somebody who does some research and figures out where is the right place and maybe the safe place or taking sort of calculated risks. These were such... You know, this was such a word-of-mouth kind of scam where somebody's brother-in-law told you that, hey, I can get you in with Bernie Madoff. That's not investing in any sort of useful definition of the term.
Now, one of the most bewildering things mentioned in your book, how Charles Ponzi was how he received an endorsement from the Bradstreet Corporation, which today I believe is known as Dun & Bradstreet. Mm. That authoritative endorsement that Ponzi got was very important to him. It grew his business, but it was also very reminiscent of the blessing that Wall Street's bankers got from those credit rating agencies like Moody's and Fitch for billions of dollars in misrated credit debt. Talk about that.
Mm. It's really so true. 80-plus years later, we didn't seem to learn a lesson from Ponzi when it came to Madoff. We had the credit rating agencies. We had certainly the SEC, the regulators. We had a tremendous amount of complicity, in my eyes, from the people who we expect to give us the sort of the straight scoop. We're not shocked when somebody touts his own business beyond reasonable levels, but when the Moody's or Fitch or the SEC or all these other regulators are basically giving somebody a gold stamp of approval when there's nothing there, when the emperor has no clothes. It immediately harks back to Ponzi when the regulators were asleep while he was ripping people off.
What's interesting about Ponzi, too, what he did was in the 20s. That was before the Securities and Exchange Commission even existed. Do you think what Ponzi did contributed to the formation of the SEC in 1934?
I think to some extent, yes. Certainly the 29 crash was the greatest impetus for that. But the fact that we had had in the 1920s a number of scams and stock frauds definitely was part of it, and Ponzi was certainly in there.
And I want to bring this to our audience. I mean, what can investors do to prevent themselves? Because this is vital for them to avoid becoming the next victims, because even though Madoff's behind bars, as we know, that's not the end of investment scams. So what can we do to prevent ourselves from becoming victims?
Well, the first thing I think is the old cliche, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And people have heard that and again, but of course, the other side of people's psyche is that this is too good to miss. And what people have to do is balance those two human impulses, and then when they are finished balancing it, then they should be leaning toward, it sounds too good to be true, and trusting that side of their brain, they have to do their homework. I've said this before, people do more research buying a $30,000 car than sometimes they do with a $300,000 investment or a $3 million.
It's true. It's true.
And that amazes me. People are
mind-boggling
reports. And now, but you wouldn't just trust the guy down the street to tell you, "Hey, that's a good car."
Right.
And so the same responsibility rests with investors when they're investing something, it's so important to them. It's not just the money. It's basically that money is a proxy for our futures, our future ability to enjoy retirement or send our children to school, or whatever we have planned. And that's a responsibility. And with responsibility comes the necessary, need to look into and know what you're doing.
Mitch Zuckoff joins us today. One last question. Are we ever going to see a Ponzi movie? I mean, I think it's time.
I agree. I will say there is a production company that has purchased the rights, and I know they're working on it. And hopefully by the next time we talk, Ron, we'll have a casting conversation, you and I.
And you better get me some free movie tickets, too.
It's a deal.
Thank you. And that, again, was Mitch Zuckoff. Mitch, keep up the good work.
Thanks, Ron. You too.
Mitch Zuckoff, professor of journalism at Boston University. As you heard there, he's author of A Ponzi Scheme, The True Story of Financial Legend. You mentioned so many great things in that interview. I liked what he mentioned there about responsibility and the need for taking financial responsibility for your own investment decisions. I mean, you can blame an incompetent police force. You can blame the Securities Exchange Commission, who definitely blew it on multiple occasions. But in the very end, the ultimate responsibility and blame shouldn't be on everyone else. Look at yourself in the mirror. When things go wrong, you're to blame. Conversely, when things go right, you're also to blame. Time for us to take a quick break. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. More when I return. Go nowhere!
Direction Shares Daily Leveraged Exchange Traded Funds are for sophisticated active traders. Before you trade them, test your knowledge about these dynamic products with the help of Direction Shares Online University. Go to directionshares.com/radio and find out if leveraged ETFs are right for your investment objectives. Enroll in the free course, study at your own pace, and if you're a financial advisor, obtain 1 hour of CE credits. Go to directionshares.com/radio today. Before investing, you should carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information is in the prospectus and summary prospectus, a copy of which may be obtained by visiting the fund's website at www.directionshares.com. The prospectuses should be read carefully before investing. Investing in the funds may be more volatile than investing in broadly diversified funds. Funds that use leverage may be riskier than alternatives that do not. The funds are not designed to track the underlying index over a longer period of time, are not suitable for all investors, and should be utilized only by investors who understand leverage and shorting risk, consequences of seeking daily leveraged investment results, and actively monitor their investments. There are risks associated with investing, including possible loss of principal. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
This is the Index Investing Show, 877-808-6116. Ron@indexshow.com is the email address. We just got off the line there with Mitch Zuckoff, author of the fine book called Ponzi Scheme, True Story of a Financial Legend. It is on my recommended reading list. I encourage all of our listeners to pick up a copy. It will give you some excellent historical background about who Ponzi really was, and beyond that, how to prevent yourself from becoming a victim. And really, Madoff's scheme is not just a financial tragedy. It's really turned into a human tragedy. According to news reports, Mark Madoff committed suicide. And to me, one of the saddest parts is it could have been prevented. It could have been prevented, but regulators failed. The victims who put their money with Madoff, they failed. And it's just a real, real sad story on so many levels. And, I guess in recent years, this SEC's, that's Wall Street's cop, the SEC, their pinnacle of regulatory success has really been illustrated by their big catches. For example, the crucifixion of garden worker Martha Stewart. It has the SEC's trademark stamp everywhere. She was convicted of lying to investigators about a stock sale that involved purportedly avoiding $45,000 in market losses. Well, Stewart served 5 months in prison with limited access to flowers and baking pans. And because of her imprisonment, the SEC almost single-handedly starved our nation. I mean, how many cooking recipes were missed during Stewart's detention? I'm glad to report that most Americans have gained back all the pounds they lost. And then there's Alan Stanford. Here's another outstanding example of the SEC's big catches. He was allowed to become a billionaire after many years of being secretly watched but never caught. In other words, strike 27 and you're out. Of course, he's no longer known as Sir Alan, but now goes as Mr. Defendant. All fingers, though, point directly to the SEC's faulty license revocation policy. See, while the agency has revoked plenty of Series 6s and 7s and 24s, it has yet to revoke anybody's license to steal. To salute his financial acumen, Antigua and Barbuda knighted Stanford as an official sir. But in Texas, where he grew up, he still goes by Catty Wampus. So there you got it. You know, the SEC failing on so many levels. And, of course, with Ponzi, as it was pointed out in that interview, there was no Securities and Exchange Commission. So I guess, to some extent, you could make the argument that, well, that was perhaps one of the reasons that it went on so long and Ponzi was able to get away with it, is because there was no Securities Exchange Commission in the 1920s when he was at it. But, of course, they came along in 1934. That's when the SEC was formed. And, of course, with Madoff, you had the SEC, what, 80 years of regulatory work. You think that they would have caught this ahead of time, but, of course, they didn't. So, all the way around, a financial tragedy, a human tragedy, and of course, the idea here is to prevent yourself from becoming a victim, because there are other scammers out there that want to take you to the cleaners, just like Madoff, just like Ponzi. Now, I wanted to get to an email earlier that was asking the question about liquidity and really trying to determine an exchange-traded fund's liquidity. Is there a certain amount or minimum trading volume? I talked with Dan Dolan at the Sector Spiders about this. Generally, you want to see a minimum, generally speaking, of 50,000 daily shares traded. And that's just a random number that some traders, some investors like to see before buying or selling an ETF. Products that have traded or that do trade with lower volume tend to have wider bid-ask spreads, which adds to your frictional cost. Now, aside from sticking with ETFs that have trading volume above 50,000 shares, you can also minimize some of these frictional trading costs by not trading during the first or the last hour of the session and by using limit orders instead of market orders. Remember, with limit orders, you predetermine the price that you're going to pay to buy or sell that particular ETF at, not some scalper. So if you'd like to send me an email question or comment, ron@indexshow.com. is the email address. Be sure to give me your first name along with your city. And 2010 coming to a close. Looks like it's going to be a good year if things hold in the equity markets. Mentioned it earlier, U.S. stocks as a group. Now, this is total U.S. stock market, ticker symbol VTI, ahead by almost 14% year to date. And anytime you have double-digit gains by major market barometers, you can say it's been a good year from an investment perspective. And if stocks just stay the same from this point forward, well, 2010 will turn out to be a pretty good year. And also, top industry sectors within the S&P 500 are performing even better than the broader market. Industrial stocks, ticker symbol XLI, have been a good year, or have had a good year, up 23.8%. Consumer discretionary stocks, ticker symbol XLY, also ahead by 26%. Those particular areas are doing well. And I don't want you just to focus on the top areas. Take a look at some of those lagging areas. I guess you might say the areas that have lagged are kind of what I would characterize as defensive sectors. For example, healthcare stocks, XLV, up 0.7%. Utilities is another area that's lagged the market. XLU, up 0.3%. So some of those areas, you know, you might want to, if you feeling a little queasy about the gains that the stock market has had, take a look at some of these underperforming areas and shore up your defensive positions. Utilities, by the way, a good area, too, for those of you looking for additional income. That traditionally has been an area of the market that's paid out steady dividends, and the utilities, XLU, yielding somewhere in the vicinity of around 4%. which is a heck of a lot better than certificates of depression, also known as CDs, or money markets funds. So take a look at that. Well, it's almost time for us to wind up here. I do want to encourage all of our listeners, if you're not able to catch our regular radio broadcast, you can always catch our podcast, which is available for free at either iTunes.com or indexshow.com. Either way, you can pick that up. A lot of changes coming in the tax code. Of course, one of those areas has been with estate taxes, which look like they're going to be reinstated come next year. And really, a true story that many years ago happened to me when I was working as a financial advisor as it pertains to estate taxes and just planning. I received a desperate phone call from a client complaining about nasty calls that she was receiving from a woman that was married to her ex-husband. You see, what happened is my client's ex-husband had passed away, but he forgot to change the beneficiary on the life insurance policy at his work. So you following this? So when he died, his life insurance policy still had his ex-wife, that was my client, as beneficiary. This was the same woman, again, who was my client. And so my client had received the $50,000 check, a death benefit check, and now she was getting threatening phone calls from her ex-husband's widow. And so she called me up asking for financial advice. So I told her to deposit the check and to change her phone number. And that's what she did. That was basically the essence of my advice. But the point here, ladies and gentlemen, is to always, always, always make sure that your beneficiary designations are accurate and up to date. And that includes not just life insurance policies, it includes your IRA accounts, individual retirement account, whether you've got a Roth IRA, traditional IRA, it matters not. It also includes 401k plans. And the best time to check this, maybe right now, toward the end of the year, looking forward to the beginning of a new year, making sure your financial house is in order. The best time also to do this and to take a look at beneficiary designations are at important junctures of your life. For example, the birth of a child, that's an important juncture of your life, wouldn't you say? Or maybe the death of someone in your family, a marriage or a divorce, retirement. Maybe you do this even on your birthday, you know. But the point here is to check to see who your beneficiaries are. Make sure they're up to date. Same goes for your trust. If you have a trust, a family trust, a charitable trust, always make sure it's accurate and up to date. Estate planning tips, simple but essential. Well, that does it for another edition, another episode of the Index Investing Show. It's been a blast. Please join us again next week, same time, same station. And until we meet again, may the market indexes be with you.
And welcome to another round of Good Idea, Bad Idea. Are you ready? Hamburger smoothies. Is that a good idea or bad idea? Mr. Jones.
I think hamburger smoothies are a good idea.
Okay, let's try this again. A beachfront property at the South Pole. Is it a good idea or bad idea?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay, one final chance to redeem yourself, Mr. Jones. Winner takes all. Leaving your 401k plan behind at an old job, is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Why, that's the absolute worst idea I've ever heard!
That's right, folks. Leaving your 401k plan behind at an old job is a really, really bad idea. Worse than hamburger smoothies and beachfront property at the South Pole. Go to 401krolloverguide.com to get your retirement money back on track. That's 401krolloverguide.com. And that does it for this round of Good Idea, Bad Idea. Please join us again next time.
The opinions expressed here on our program not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult the prospectus for risks, charges, expenses, and other important information. Read and consider the prospectus carefully before investing. All mutual funds are subject to risk and a possible loss of principal. Past performances are not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the express written consent of its producers.
The John Gambling Show.
Nobody goes unscathed in this problem, whether it's in Trenton, whether it's in Albany, or whether it's in Hartford.
John Gambling, weekday mornings from 5:30 to 9.
These are the people that have made the decisions that have gotten us to this point. Now they've got to come up with the decisions to get us out of this.
John Gambling.
That makes them happy when they let more bonds and spend more of your money and therefore have to raise the tolls.
John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
The Steve Malzberg Show.
We're a Judeo-Christian nation. Doesn't mean other religions aren't welcome and respected.
Steve Malzberg.
Really good to hear you on the radio.
And you're still liberal. Thank you. I appreciate
that, Gary.
Well,
but I'm converted, my friend.
Drive home with the Steve Malzberg Show.
You loony leftists? We all know. I got a whole lot of good things to say.
The Steve Malzberg Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6. News Talk Radio 710 WOR. 710 WOR and WOR HD, New York's best.